Good day. Welcome to another episode of the Audible Local Ledger Reads to the Blind podcast. You can get more information at audiblelocalledger.org. Stay tuned for today's reading.
Hi, this is Gay, and I'll be reading the Fall River Herald News for today, Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. We'll start with the weather. Today, you can expect sun mixing with clouds, temperatures 65 to 72, with lows 44 to 51. Tomorrow, it'll be we'll have sunshine and breezy with temperatures 64 to 71 and lows 42 to 49. On Friday, we'll have clouds and sun, temperatures 67 to 74 and lows 44 to 51. And for the Memorial Day weekend, we'll have nice weather. It'll be partly sunny and nice both Saturday and Sunday with temperatures 73 to 80 with lows 48 to 55. And now Monday's lottery numbers. Those drawn Monday afternoon, 4, 4, 8, 8. The numbers drawn Monday night, 4, 5, 3, 4. Mass cash, 2, 3, 7, 29, 32. Lucky for life, 17, 25, 37, 40, 41, and 1. And the Powerball, 9, 38, 48, 52, 68, 25, and the Powerball, the 4X. Our first story today comes from Fall River. Former Fall River cop on trial. Jury sees video evidence of arrest by Joe C. Good. Fall River. Former Fall River police officer Michael Pessoa and fellow officers knowingly lied about the arrest of a city resident in February 2019, then fabricated police reports to cover up an assault by the veteran patrol officer that injured David LaFrance and led to his false arrest, according to Bristol County Assistant District Attorney William McCauley. But Pessoa was justified to take LaFrance down when officers encountered the belligerent and drunken man after receiving a complaint of an altercation with a neighbor, according to Pessoa's defense attorney, Frank Camara. Officer Pessoa needed to do what he needed to do, said Camara. What should have been a routine interaction with police turned out to result in him being punched, bruised, and battered, injured, arrested, held in custody, and false charges brought against him that resulted in prosecution based on a pack of lies, said McCauley in opening arguments. The jury of 9 women and 4 men were going to hear these are admitted liars, said McCauley, referring to former Fall River police officers who would be called as prosecution witnesses. At least 2 of them testified with immunity in a grand jury in 2019 when Pessoa was indicted on multiple charges. Pessoa, in the trial involving LaFrance, faces 1 count each for assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, civil rights violations, intimidating a witness, and false report by a public official. A few minutes into McCauley's opening argument, he played a surveillance video that captured the minutes that Pessoa and then fellow officers Thomas Roberts, Andre DeMello, and Sean Aguilar arrived at an apartment building at 554 South Main Street. They were responding to a complaint that LaFrance had threatened to fight a neighbor. At one point, DeMello and Aguilar handcuffs LaFrance, who does not appear to resist, while Roberts and Pessoa enter the apartment building for 2 minutes. When they come out, Roberts, who was the lead officer on the call, is seen uncuffing LaFrance's right hand after Pessoa steps off a stoop and appears to punch LaFrance in the face, then falls to the ground. The 4 officers then struggle with LaFrance on the ground and fully handcuffed him. McCauley also showed photographs taken at St. Anne's Hospital emergency room by a family member showing a split lip and facial swelling as well as bruising to his body. In his opening statement, Camara played his own video for the jury, showing what happens to be the same surveillance camera a short time before police arrived. LaFrance can be seen kicking another man from the same apartment stoop. The first officer called to the stand on Monday was Roberts, who before the jury was seated had been granted immunity for his testimony for the prosecution by Judge Rene P. Dupuis. Roberts had been given similar immunity for his grand jury testimony as did Aguilar. Roberts, who was eventually fired from the Fall River Police Department, but said from the stand Monday that he still wanted to save his job, testified that he didn't believe he had probable cause to arrest LaFrance. Just before Pessoa allegedly punched LaFrance in the face, Roberts was releasing LaFrance from temporary custody. I told him I was going to kick him loose, Roberts said, who testified he was a foot away from LaFrance when the man was being uncuffed. I know he was taken to the ground, but I don't know how, said Roberts. McCauley said that clearly Roberts would have asked what just happened. I don't think I asked, said Roberts. After LaFrance was allegedly assaulted, Roberts, said Pessoa, who at the time had been a patrol officer for 19 years, told Roberts that he was taking over as lead officer in the case. McCauley argued that by taking over the case, Pessoa wrote the narrative of events in February 2019. Roberts testified that he never saw or heard a threat made by LaFrance. In a police report, and later in a use of force report, so alleged that LaFrance said, as he was being uncuffed, that he would punch the officers when freed. The other three officers were also ordered to complete use of force forms, which all contained similar narratives that LaFrance was uncooperative and threatened the police officers. Roberts testified that Pessoa was the intermediary between a superior officer who ordered the use of force reports. He said Pessoa approached him on a few occasions to alter the use of force report to indicate the actions taken against LaFrance was justified and to protect the officers from harm. Roberts, who often changed his story of his perception of events on the stand, said there was one detail in Pessoa's report he didn't agree with, that he'd helped Pessoa to take LaFrance to the ground with an armbar. Again, he admitted to McCauley that he never heard a threat, although it was included in his use of force statement. Are you suggesting that you were somehow intimidated by him in this time? You then allowed him to say things in his report that were false, asked McCauley. No, said Roberts. But you didn't do anything about it, said McCauley. No, responded Roberts. Camera argued that there was ample probable cause for Roberts to change LaFrance with several crimes, but Roberts chose not to and pointed blame on the superior officer for ordering him to inappropriately file a use of force report because you would have been fired for insubordination. Kemmer also argued that there was no collusion between the officers, just confusion as to why the other three officers had to file the reports. Kemmer asked Roberts if he was intimidated by the prosecutor, because it looks like you are. Roberts denied being intimidated, but Kemmer pressed him. You want to give him the answers he's asking you because you want to save your job, asked Kemmer. No, but I do want to save my job, said Roberts. Our next story is a new Taste of Portugal food tour launching in Fall River by Ashley Schuler. What better way to explore a culture or a city than through its cuisine? That is the central idea behind Viva Fall River's latest tourism effort, a delicious one at that, as groups soon set out on a culinary quest in and around downtown for a Taste of Portugal food tour. What's the difference between Chorico and Linguica? Is it true that Fall River has the largest percentage of Portuguese-American residents? The city nonprofit and its partners, New Bedford Food Tours, promised to answer these questions and more as they launch the tour, which launches May 26th and makes its way down the picturesque cobblestone Columbia Street, a historic hub of the city's Portuguese community. According to Patty Rigo, executive director of Viva Fall River, Taste of Portugal offers an entree to the city in more ways than one because its focus goes just beyond food. It's about the culture, community, the role of the Portuguese culture plays in Fall River, and where we are now, she said. The tour is meant to boost Fall River's reputation as a unique food destination, highlighting the rich, authentic, and diverse culinary culture in the city. I'm always looking for ways to showcase the cultural bounty that we have here, and the best and the most delicious bounty is the food. It's such a common denominator. People love to connect over food, Rigo said. The Taste of Portugal is the perfect catalyst for that, Rigo said. The goal is to get folks to first notice the city, and once they're interested in the city through food, you can show them other things and get them to come back again and to see more and discover more. It's kind of like an entree, she said. Taste of Portugal is hosted by New Bedford Food Tours in collaboration with Viva Fall River. Talks of bringing culinary tours to the Spindle City began over a year ago, Rigo said. With some input from prominent members of the Portuguese community, their goal in mapping out this tour was to also connect to the Portuguese culture and more specifically the Fall River Portuguese American immigrant experience. The key was finding the right tour guide, Rigo said, someone not only familiar with Portuguese culture, but with experience of being an immigrant themselves. Rigo said they are so blessed. Bristol Community College professor Odete Amarelo, PhD, agreed to take the lead. I couldn't think of anybody better, Rigo said. She brings a personal experience to it as well as a scholarly approach. Your mind and your belly will be fed. The itinerary for the 3-hour Taste of Portugal walking tour includes 8 stops. The 1.5-mile trek steps off and ends with the Viva Fall River Maker Shop at the corner of South Main and Columbia Street. From there, the route continues down Columbia Street with stops at Nobrega's Market, Tony's Bakery, Sagar's Restaurant, Columbia Bakery, Chavez Market, and Europa Pastries and Coffee Shop. Santo Cristo Church is the only non-food stop on the tour, but Rigo said they felt it was important to include because the church and religious tradition play a huge role not only in culture, but in food in Portugal, and it's just a beautiful place. At Viva Fall River Maker Shop, they'll be bringing Fall River's famed Portugalia Marketplace to participants with olive oil and wine tastings. And along their journey, participants will enjoy more small bites from Pastéis de Nata at Europa, recently crowned the Fall River Nata Throwdown Champion, to some traditional Portuguese dishes and wine at Sagres and more. They might even go home with some sweet bread or a Tarico roll. I had such a blast. It's super engaging and fun, said Rigo of her experience tasting a test run of the tour. She noted, however, that this is not a tour for people who have food allergies or require food substitutions. While they were trying to be accommodating, Rigo said the taste of Portugal cuisine is meant to be consumed in the way that culture presents the food. It's meant to preserve the integrity of the experience. Taste of Portugal ties into Viva Fall River's larger tourism effort, which has included the popular Fall River Restaurant Week, self-guided meat pie and ice cream tours, and the Take Five Off of I-95 initiative that started last summer and will return again this year. For Rigo, these efforts are aimed at getting people to rediscover or discover different things about Fall River than the things they think they know, challenging perceptions always. Plans down the line also include another self-guided tour highlighting all the Latin American restaurants in the city, which have boomed in recent years. Tickets for Taste of Portugal are $90 per person, with everything included. Tours kick off on May 26th, and starting in June will be held twice a month from 1 to 4 through October. For specific tour dates or to get your tickets, visit www.nbfoodtours.com/tasteofportugal. As a reminder, this is Gay reading the Fall River Herald News for Wednesday, May 24th, 2023, and there are no obituaries today. For our next story, Beware, a Bear Has Been Seen in Fall River, Dartmouth, and It Could Be the Same Animal, by Dan Medeiros and Matthew Ferreira. Massachusetts Environmental Police have put out an APB, Avoid Pesky Bears, for a wild animal seen wandering through yards and wooded areas across the South Coast. This weekend saw multiple bear sightings in Fall River and Dartmouth, with social media posts capturing the public's attention and state, local, and environmental police attempting to track the animal's whereabouts. It is believed, but not confirmed, to be the same bear, stated environmental police. No aggression was observed. Based on observations and typical habits, MEP released more information about the bear and its recent wanderings through the South Coast. Here's what we know so far. The first bear sighting was reported to MEP on Saturday afternoon in Freetown. A report later that night saw the bear on a resident's deck on Apple Creek Lane in Fall River in the city's far north end. The bear was also tracked to Dewey Street, Highland Avenue, Ellsbury Street, and Winifred Way, all in the city's north end. Dartmouth police notified MEP of another bear sighting around 9:45 a.m. Monday at the home of Antonia Way in the town off Collins Corner Road near the Copacut Reservoir. When MEP arrived on the scene 15 minutes later, the bear had departed into a nearby wooded area. MEP is not certain if it's a male or female bear, but it is estimated to weigh 80 to 100 pounds. According to Mass Wildlife, adult female black bears can range in weight from 100 to 400 pounds, with adult males from 130 to 600 pounds. The bear has not attacked or threatened anyone, and it appears to be alone. It is believed that the bear was attracted to a bird feeder at two of these recent sightings, MEP stated. Mass Wildlife says about 4,500 black bears live in Massachusetts, but they're not common to southeastern Massachusetts. They typically live and breed in the western part of the state, but their territory has been slowly expanding eastward in recent years. While the sightings in Fall River and Dartmouth may seem distant from one another, they are only 6 miles apart with the southeastern Massachusetts bioreserve between them. A bear can easily travel many miles in a day, especially if it's drawn by food. While rare, black bear sightings have happened locally in recent memory. Taunton residents spotted a black bear cub in residential neighborhoods a few days ago, caught on house surveillance cameras. It was seen walking along sidewalks and driveways, roaming through property and looking in trash barrels. Last year, a black bear was seen on the median of Interstate 495 in Middleborough and had to be euthanized after being struck by a car. Other bear sightings in Brockton drew warnings to secure trash outdoors. And in 2021, a black bear named Boo Boo was seen in Attleboro, Taunton, and as far east as Cape Cod. If you see the bear, do not attempt to approach it. Call the Mass Environmental Police at 800-632-8075. In event of an emergency, dial 911. Take down bird feeders and don't leave pet food outdoors. Those are food sources for bears. According to the National Park Service, bears have an incredibly keen sense of smell and are able to detect food from several miles away. Bears are wary of humans. If you see it, yell, clap, bang pots and pans, or make loud noises to frighten the bear. It will most likely leave, as well as any cubs that are with it. Do not attempt to shoot the bear. Do not leave any small pets unattended outside. Consider attaching bells or other noisemakers to your pet's collar if outside. If the bear is nearby, it may hear the unfamiliar noise and keep away. Keep your trash barrels closed and secure. And if you keep any beehives or live chickens outside, secure them behind an electrified fence. Our next story is from New Bedford. Finest Kind producer teases upcoming fall 2023 release date for film by Seth Chitwood. Since filming in June 2022, the New Bedford set feature film Finest Kind finally eyes a fall 2023 release date. I can tell you that we're going to premiere the movie in September and release it theatrically in October, said Gary Foster, producer. I can't give you dates, I can't get the details, but that's pretty much the game plan. Finest Kind follows two brothers from opposite sides of the tracks who are reunited as adults over one fateful summer, when desperate circumstances force them to strike a deal with a dangerous Boston crime syndicate, a young woman finds herself caught in the middle. Along the way, sacrifices must be made, and bonds between brothers, friends, and a father and his son are put to the test. The film was acquired last year by Paramount Plus and will also stream on its platform. We are really pleased with it. It's good. It's the movie we intended to make, Foster said, adding that New Bedford native and Oscar-winning director Brian Hegdlin did an amazing job from top to bottom. Everybody really did a fabulous job, and the world will tell us in September what they think. The film stars Ben Foster from Hell and High Water and Toby Wallace of Pistol, alongside Tim Daly from Madam Secretary, Jenna Ortega from You, and Lolita Davidovich, Hollywood Homicide, and Oscar winner Tommy Lee Jones. Foster said it has been exciting to especially see Ortega's career skyrocket since filming with the release of both Netflix Wednesday and the reboot of Scream. At the time of casting, we hadn't seen anything of Wednesday, although Tim Burton called me when we were thinking of casting her and telling me and Brian not to hesitate, that she's incredible, Foster said. We had this inclination that she'd have a great year. Bottom line is she was amazing in her auditions and was perfect for the part. After 35 days of filming and 22 days in the New Bedford area, Finest Kind completed filming in the last day on June 7th with its final scene on the Fairhaven, New Bedford Bridge. Scenes were also shot in Fairhaven Harbor, downtown New Bedford, Custom House Square, and in a residential area of the North End. We're excited for the New Bedford community to see the film. We're very proud of it, Foster said, adding that the September screening and premiere in New Bedford will be exciting. With summer approaching, our next story is about shark bites. Recent U.S. attacks worry beachgoers. Experts say dangerous interactions are rare, by Patrick Whittle from Portland, Maine. Recent shark bites in Florida and Hawaii and a suspected case in New Jersey have piqued interest in an age-old summer question for beachgoers. Is it safe to go in the water? Scientists and researchers who study sharks said the overwhelming answer to that question is yes, it is safe. Potentially dangerous interactions between humans and sharks are uncommon, and serious injuries and deaths from the bites are vanishingly rare, said scientists. Nonetheless, the dramatic nature of shark bites and the stories of survivors, such as Hawaii surfer Mike Burita's tale of fighting off a shark in April, capture the imagination. It's a good idea to remember just how rare shark bites truly are, scientists said. There have been typically around 70 to 80 unprovoked shark bites annually worldwide over the past decade. And not only are shark bites rare, they've been especially rare recently. There were only 57 unprovoked bites last year, and 5 of those were fatal, according to the University of Florida's International Shark Attack File. There have been 9 such deaths the previous year. The Shark Attack File reported a year ago that one reason for decline in bites might be the global decline of shark populations. It's too early in the warm season to get an idea of how active this year will be for interactions between humans and sharks, said Greg Skolmol, a shark expert with the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. If we get lots of bait fish and forage fish species close to the shore, we have a super hot summer that draws people to the beaches, more people in the water, then we can determine the risk, Skolmol said. The United States and Australia are typically the sites of the most reported shark bites. Florida had more bites than anywhere else on Earth last year, with 16 unprovoked bites, two of which resulted in amputations, the Shark Attack File said. This month, two Florida fishermen were bitten by sharks in separate incidents less than 36 hours apart. The rate of shark bites has stayed steady in recent years, but it might feel like a more common occurrence because of the prevalence of smartphones, said Nick Whitney, a senior scientist at the New England Aquarium in Boston. Recently developed smartphone apps allow users to report shark sighting in real time. White sharks, bull sharks, and tiger sharks are the sharks most sighted by the International Shark Attack File for unprovoked bites. Those species are large sharks that also cause the most fatalities. However, it's worth bearing in mind that many interactions with sharks are with smaller species that are unlikely to cause serious injuries, said James Sulikowski, director of the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station at Oregon State University. Those species might bite a human, realize we are not in their preferred prey, and move on, he said. Is it safe to swim? Yes, you're at exponentially greater risk of getting hurt in a car accident on the way to the beach than you are to get seriously injured by a shark bite. Millions of people flock to the beach in the summer as weather heats up, and that raises the possibility of interacting with a shark. But by taking simple precautions, such as not carrying shiny objects into the water and not swimming at dawn or dusk, beachgoers can reduce any chance of dangerous encounter with a shark, Sulikowski said. We are intruders in their environment. What we can do is be logical and safe about that and avoid areas where sharks are going to be feeding, Sulikowski said. When an interaction occurs, it's mistaken identity. We are in an area where a shark is looking to eat. From Washington, Medicaid plans to audit the prices of costliest drugs by Amanda Seitz. The Biden administration said Tuesday it is planning to conduct a yearly audit to verify the prices drug makers charge on a handful of the costliest prescriptions covered by Medicaid. Under the proposal, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services would require as many as 10 drug makers every year to furnish the government with proprietary and non-proprietary information as evidence to support the price it charges, which administers Medicaid. Drugs that cost Medicaid the most money, some as much as $2 million per treatment, will be selected for the survey. The proposal was prompted by rising drug prices and complaints from state leaders who say they are having trouble negotiating those costs with manufacturers, said Dan Tsai, director of Center for Medicaid and Children's Insurance Programs. We've got very high-cost drugs who have no competition, Tsai said Tuesday. More than 90 million people are enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP, which provides the poorest Americans with health insurance. Simply surveying the cost of drugs won't change the price, and CMS doesn't have the power to force drug companies to change how much they charge. But the administration hopes making more information about how drug companies arrive at their pricing publicly available will put political pressure on the drug companies. Drug makers that refuse to provide information to CMS will be referred to the U.S. Health and Human Services Office of Inspector General, which can launch criminal and civil investigations, he said. The proposal hasn't been finalized yet, and the public will have 60 days to weigh in on it. For our next story, Sate Sue Company over robocalls. From Phoenix, attorneys general across the United States joined in a lawsuit Tuesday against a telecommunications company accused of making more than 7.5 billion robocalls to people on the National Do Not Call Registry. The 141-page suit was filed in U.S. District Court in Phoenix against Avid Telecom, its owner, Michael D. Lansky, and company's vice president, Stacy S. Reeves. The suit arises from the nationwide bipartisan anti-robocall multi-state litigation task force of 51 attorneys general and the District of Columbia. It was formed last year to investigate and take legal action against telecommunications companies routing volumes of robocall traffic. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, said nearly 197 million of the robocalls were made to Arizona phone numbers between December 2018 and January 2023. Every day, countless Arizona consumers are harassed and annoyed by a relentless barrage of unwanted robocalls. And in some instances, these illegal calls can threaten consumers with lawsuits and arrest, Mays said in a statement. More disturbingly, many of these calls are scams designed to pressure frightened consumers, often senior citizens, into handing over their hard-earned money. The suit said Avid Telecom used spoofed or invalid caller ID numbers, including more than 8.4 million calls that appeared to be coming from government and law enforcement agencies, as well as private companies. The company also allegedly sent or transmitted scam calls about the Social Security Administration, Medicare, Amazon, and DirecTV, as well as auto warranties, employment, and credit card interest rate reductions. Americans are sick and tired of their phones ringing off the hook with fraudulent robocalls, New York Attorney General Letitia James said. Lansky has a phone listing in Tucson, Arizona, but didn't immediately return a call seeking comment on the lawsuit, and there was no available number for Reeves in Orlando, Florida. Here's a story out of California. Man killed helping ducklings safely cross busy California street, by Sophie Austin and Christopher Weber. Rockland, California. His family says it's no surprise that Casey Rivera's final act was one of compassion. When he spotted a mama duck trying to guide her ducklings across a busy California intersection, Rivera stopped his car at a red light and got out to help them make it to safety. Rivera made sure traffic in all directions was stopped, witnesses said, then escorted the duck and her babies to the other side of the street around 8:15 p.m. last Thursday in suburban Rockland, northeast of Sacramento. All the ducks made it safely across, said 11-year-old Jude Peterson, who was watching with the carpool group after track practice. He did something amazing. His good deed was done. Rivera was walking back to his car when another vehicle came through the intersection and struck him. He flew through the air and landed in the street. The 41-year-old father of two died at the scene. Casey was the kindest, most amazing husband and father. Even his last act in this world was a sign of his compassion, his aunt Tracy Rivera wrote on a verified GoFundMe page, raising money for his widow and their 11-year-old daughter and 6-year-old son. Nearly $90,000 was raised by Tuesday afternoon. The family is trying to figure out how to recover and keep going after this immense loss, his aunt wrote. The driver of the car that hit him, a 17-year-old girl, remained at the scene and is cooperating with investigators, said Rockland Police Captain Scott Harillo. Detectives are still interviewing witnesses and reviewing video, he said, but it doesn't appear the teen driver will face charges. Right now, we don't have any reason to believe there was any criminal negligence, Harillo said Monday. He called it a tragic accident. Flowers adorned a growing memorial to Rivera at the accident site on Tuesday in Rockland, a city of about 73,000 people. Somebody also left several toy rubber ducks. Casey was married to Angel Chow, his high school sweetheart. The inseparable pair met at age 17 when she arrived at his high school as an exchange student from Hong Kong, according to the GoFundMe page. His family was Casey's world, and to remain even closer to the family, they had recently started working at their children's school, Tracy Rivera wrote. He loved working at the school as he was able to positively impact other children. His wife said the family has been touched by the outpouring of love and support from family, friends, coworkers, and community members. It's truly humbling to hear how Casey has positively impacted your lives, and we're extremely grateful for that, Chow wrote Monday on Facebook. She said she planned to compile the tributes in a book that our children can turn to whenever they miss him. Jude Peterson, the young witness, said he was in shock and so scared after witnessing the tragedy. His mother, Summer Peterson, said Jude was in tears when he got home that night. By Monday, his mother said Jude had processed his shock and was filled with admiration for Rivera. He did the right thing, Jude said. He wanted to help because there were ducks in the road, and he didn't want anyone to hit the ducks. And that brings us to the end of our reading today of the Fall River Herald News for Wednesday, May 24th, 2023. Thank you, and have a good week.